The Shattering Mess. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning here on the Genesis Communication Network, we strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you'll listen, your eyes may be opened, and you may ultimately change your mind. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines. Then, during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms and by way of His one and only covenant through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason. Our phone number, if you would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is presented over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. Yesterday, of course, we focused on the trial balloon that is the Cyprus confiscation of savings. And we talked about that in conjunction with the reality that as we move towards the New World Order, indeed, if you look at America the way that it exists today, earning is a bad thing. Business is a bad thing. Savings is a bad thing. Being dependent on government is a good thing. And so what we're finding is that reckless spending and deficit financing is considered good, it is forgiven, and savings, which is the result of having earned money and having spent less than one earned, is bad, and so it must be confiscated. And it is obvious, since the enormity of the risk associated with the Cyprus confiscation of people's savings was so egregious and put all of Europe on edge, with the potential for people not being comatose and responding by pulling their monies out of banks, that there's only one way that such a disaster, such an immoral, such an irrational scheme could be perpetrated, and that is as a trial balloon, to see how in a tiny country with a small amount of money relative to the debt of Europe, whether or not the people would respond rationally, or whether or not they are indeed comatose, whether the vast preponderance of people can be manipulated, can have their funds confiscated without rebuttal, without response. And what they're finding is that the response is indeed minimal. The only concession that is likely to be made in Cyprus is that savings accounts of under 100,000 euros will not be taxed. They will not have funds confiscated. But the savings accounts over 100,000 euros will have 10% of their savings stolen. That was a deal that was worked out in advance so that they could show that they were compassionate, that they were with the majority of the people. We even find out that Lagarde, the French woman that is head of the International Monetary Fund, not only was appraised of this maneuver, but gave it her public endorsement. Of course, this kind of reckless behavior has a consequence. The Eurozone as a whole has been in a recession now for quite some time, and unemployment continues to rise. It is now 12%. For those who are celebrating the reduction of unemployment in America by one-tenth of a percent in the last quarter's results, be apprised that it really wasn't good news. You see, while the administration said, oh boy, we added a couple of 100,000 new jobs, the reality was that during the same period of time, what they did not tell you is over 300,000 people ceased searching for jobs. 300,000 people that had previously been considered unemployed stopped searching for work. The moment someone stops searching for work, even though they remain unemployed, they are no longer counted as unemployed. In other words, during the time that the administration claimed it had achieved great success in creating jobs, more jobs were lost than were found. France and Spain, which are amongst those countries hit hardest by this current debt crisis in Europe, the crisis that they have brought upon themselves, a crisis that the United States is in far worse shape than any European country with exception of Greece. They also expect to miss their budget targets this year. Their budget targets are fairly simple. They don't have to balance their budget. It's not like a business. It's not like a home. This is government, and government in this age does not have a target of balancing their budgets. No, it's that their deficits are not supposed to exceed 6% of their gross domestic product. The United States now is annualizing the debt, adding to the debt each year at about 10% of gross domestic product, and that is about what France and Spain are contributing, adding it to their existing debt each year. Now, proposals to deepen Eurozone integration is all that is being discussed. They have recently announced that there is a new tax on banks. There's new regulations as to what bankers can be paid. In many of these countries now, private banks have been nationalized, as they have been in France, as they are in Italy. And so the solution that politicians are proposing to resolve their inability to balance their budgets is more control over businesses that already balance their budgets. You know, I was talking with our producer, Scott, during the prelude to the show, and I said, you know, is it any wonder that a politician has no clue how to balance the books, how to properly evaluate economic choices? These guys spend tens of millions of dollars of other people's money to win a job that pays $100,000. I mean, if you're in such a mixed-up world that you're spending tens of millions of dollars of other people's money to win a job that pays you $100,000, you're already upside down in terms of your thinking. And so when we have politicians that are managing the playing field to which business can operate, politicians that can't balance their books when businesses must, we have a world that is upside down. As we continue to study this story, CNN out of, this is the BBC out of Europe, they are reporting that the big debate in the EU now is whether austerity is making prospects for recovery worse. Now, what they're considering now to be austerity, austerity is the new dastardly word in Europe. It's replaced concepts like intolerance. It's replaced discrimination. It's replaced bigotry and racism. It is now austerity is the nasty word. And what austerity is thought to be, the way that it is viewed, is that if you only spend 50% more than the revenue that you take in, if your books are out of balance by approximately 50% and you're being limited to that, you're austere. If you are not increasing the amount that you're paying people that have not earned what you are giving them, you're being austere. If you're not giving people free college education, you're being austere. If you're not paying for people's health care, you're being austere. If you're not paying for people's retirement, you're being austere. If you're not providing food and housing for people who didn't work for either and who have squandered their money either in drugs or alcohol, you're being austere. You see, governments throughout Europe are spending, just like is the United States, are spending 50% more than they are receiving in tax revenues. And that's considered austere. We are so warped as a world, particularly in the West, that the majority of people genuinely think that it is appropriate, it is fair, it is compassionate to confiscate that which others earn, that which others have saved, to give them the money. That's considered the solution. If you simply have government spend twice as much as they take in revenue, increasing their debt, assuring that they will collapse economically and go into utter chaos, that is being compassionate in today's world. That is the debate. And as a fact, now, we even have economists, and by the way, an economist is somebody who has never worked a day in their life, kind of like a politician, never worked for a business, have never founded a business, have never met payroll, have never had to try to raise capital, have never tried to balance their budget, have never tried to eke out a profit. Well, these economists now are arguing that in the current circumstances, austerity may actually be making government borrowing rise, partly because of the impact that declining production has on tax revenue and welfare spending, the BBC correspondents say. In other words, if you simply recklessly indebt the future of a country and you lavish welfare spending on the people, give them money that they have not earned, and you have government spend tons of money on things that blow things up like militaries and poorly manage other aspects of the infrastructure, like post offices, if you continue to squander money on teachers' union salaries, for example, oh, the economy will be so much better because you'll receive more tax revenue. Well, the flaw in that model, that at one time had some short-term justification, is that the kind of people receiving the handouts from government don't pay tax. You know, America is not the only country in the world where the majority of people pay nothing in tax. So if you give the welfare recipient more money, if you provide more lavish food stamp programs, if you increase Social Security, it does not matter. It doesn't increase the tax revenue because the majority of the people receiving such benefits don't pay any tax. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have a related story. This morning we learned that French police have searched the Paris apartment of the International Monetary Fund chief Christine Lagarde's apartment flat as they investigated her role in awarding financial compensation to a businessman. His name is Bernard Tapie in 2008. This is a story that has been smoldering for some time. It is why she never should have been chosen to head the IMF. But at the time, the IMF had centered its focus on Europe. It was obvious, even though the United States had been the largest contributor to the IMF, that the IMF was going to be under European control and was going to serve as a pseudo overriding central bank for European central banks, and that the country that is the mouse that roared, France, would provide its chief. Well, she is a snake in the grass. You see, it's interesting, and this is the thing that we should expect as we move towards the New World Order and the tribulation, that here you have a woman who provided 400 million euros as an award to a businessman, using her position to award him that money while she is confiscating the money of ordinary individuals in Cyprus. So on one hand, she takes, the other hand, she gives. Welcome to the fascist New World Order that is approaching. The BBC's Christian Fraser in Paris says the investigators suspect that Mr. Tappy was granted the deal in return for his support of President Sarkozy in 2007, someone whose political coattails Miss Christine Lagarde was riding. Mr. Tappy, who has long been active in French business, supporting and supporting political candidates, sued the bank known as Credit Lyonnais over its handling of a sale in 1993 of sportswear brand Adidas. Now, what was the bank doing owning the sportswear brand? And, of course, the issue here and the reason that she is being investigated is that the bank had been nationalized by the French government. And so now you have the French government owning the sportswear brand. And so years after this all occurred, Ms. Lagarde turned over the case to an arbitration panel, but critics are saying that arbitration should not have been brought into consideration since the bank is owned by the state. But what you have here is just a classic example of what you should expect. Those who are empowered, the oligarchs, if you will the merchants of the New Babylon, will receive enormous benefits while the savings and earnings of average people are confiscated. Many of you know that we are now celebrating, and I will put that in air quotes, the 10-year anniversary of America's ill-fated invasion of Iraq. Of course, President George W. Bush said that we had to invade Iraq because Saddam Hussein had chemical weapons and weapons of mass destruction. Well, that was a lie. It was untrue. In the State of the Union, the nincompoop known as King George II said that the smoking gun was going to be a nuclear bomb because Saddam Hussein had acquired enormous sums, amounts of uranium, yellow cake uranium from Nigeria. At the time, he knew that that was untrue. But nonetheless, he used it to beguile Congress into supporting his war. As that war turned horribly bad, the president said, oh, the reason we had to invade is because we had to go after Al-Qaeda because Al-Qaeda bombed our buildings. That was the real reason that we invaded Iraq. Well, that too was a lie. Al-Qaeda had no presence of any kind in Iraq when we invaded. Al-Qaeda's presence in Iraq only emerged years after the American invasion. Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were foes. They hated one another. In fact, Osama bin Laden pled with Saudi Arabia for the right to go to war against Saddam Hussein, because he wasn't a good Muslim. The only reason that Al-Qaeda developed a presence in Iraq is because of the American invasion. America deposed the secular dictator, turned the country over to the Shia mullahs in Tehran, and Al-Qaeda was now required to come in to balance the atrocities, to stave off the mass killings that Shiites were now perpetrating on Sunnis. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion by calling 877-300-7645. So this is the story from Reuters. A dozen car bombs and suicide blasts tore into Shiite districts in Baghdad and throughout the south of the Iraqi capital on Tuesday, killing more than 60 people on the 10th anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion that ousted Saddam Hussein. Sunni insurgents, and these would be, of course, according to the Reuters, linked to Al-Qaeda. Now, the fact is that we know for absolute certain that the Sunni Islamists are not insurgents, they're fundamentalists, and we know for certain that they are not linked to Al-Qaeda. When America murdered Osama bin Laden, rather than bringing him to trial, America found in his computer files and in his handwritten notes correspondence with Islamic terrorist organizations around the world, particularly letters that were written to the three Islamic groups that have, without permission, borrowed aspects of the Al-Qaeda name. And in each case, Osama bin Laden said, I don't like you. I have nothing to do with you. I don't respect what you're doing. You are not doing what is appropriate to do. I want nothing to do with you. There are no links to Al-Qaeda. That is a myth, and that is a disgusting myth, because it is perpetrated to justify America's continued squandering of blood and coin throughout the Middle East. The Sunnis that are killing Shias in Iraq are doing so because America ousted a secular dictator and replaced that secular dictator with a Sunni Islamist, a Shia Islamist government that has militias. And those militias are terrorizing the Sunnis, and so the Sunnis are responding the only way they know how, with terror. They're responding to the Shias the same way that the Shias terrorized them. That is the scenario that America created by its invasion. Tuesday's bombs exploded near a busy Baghdad market. You know, you notice that that Muslims always have a conniption fit, that non-Muslims are killing Muslim women and children. Well, the primary murderer of women and children in the Islamic world are Muslims. This story continues to say that a decade after the U.S. and Western troops swept Saddam from power, Iraq still struggles with insurgents, sectarian friction, and political feuds among Shiite, Sunni, and Kurdish factions. Can you imagine this nincompoop, this absolute illiterate idiot, illiterate in the sense of not bothering to read, who wrote for Reuters? Saying a decade after our invasion and ousting of Saddam Hussein, Iraq still struggles with insurgents, sectarian factions, and political feuds. They will go on in this article to say that the level of atrocities, of suicide bombings in Iraq are just two a week, and have averaged two a week. They don't talk about the level of carnage, of course, which is averaging about 25 or so per suicide bomber. And that two-a-week level has been consistent for the last few years. And they will say, oh, but that is so much better than the level of terror that was perpetrated on Iraq 3 years after the U.S. invasion. And they'll say, by comparison, this isn't really so bad. This is the kind of reasoning, or lack thereof, that gets people into the scenario where they say, Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. We ousted Saddam Hussein, so we did a good thing in Iraq. Unable to recognize that Iraq under Saddam Hussein was a hell of a lot better than Iraq today. That we actually made things worse. It doesn't count the millions of lives that were lost. It doesn't count the $6 billion that was squandered, $6 trillion that was squandered. And all the things that could have been done with that $6 trillion that would have made for a better world, not a worse one. It doesn't count the fact that we gave Iraq to Iran so that Iran can complete its nuclear program, so that Iran could expand its influence, so that Iran could create what we're now witnessing in Syria with the murders of hundreds of thousands of people, the murder, rape, and displacement of hundreds of thousands of people. When you view things out of a proper context, you end up with the idiocy of saying that Islam is better than Christianity because in Spain, the Spanish Inquisition, sponsored by the Catholic Church, was worse at its peak than was the treatment of Jews under the Muslims in Spain. And so the idea is that the worst of your behavior is not as bad as the best, or the worst of your behavior is worse than the best of our behavior. That's the comparison. In the case of Iraq, if you want to make a comparison as to whether Iraq is better or worse off as it relates to terrorism as a result of the American invasion, then what you would do is what I did on the Islamic terrorist timeline. You would study the amount of terrorism perpetrated in Iraq during the 10 years prior to the American invasion and compare that to the level of terrorism following the American invasion. And what you find is rather than two suicide bombings a week that kill some 25 people plus mass assassinations that take place every day across that country, where every day scores of people are being killed by terrorists today, in the 10 years prior to the American invasion, they averaged two terrorist attacks per year. And the death toll was much less than what the average suicide bomber kills today. It is our ongoing problem with thinking, this unwillingness to understand things in context. You know, the idiot that would say, oh, but we accomplished something really worthy in Iraq by ousting Saddam Hussein, who is a bad guy, and not thinking of the consequence or the difference in Iraq now versus then, the world now versus then, Iran now versus then, the Middle East, the Muslim power base now versus then. And so after squandering so much money, what we have now is nothing but a country destroying itself, a country split with warring factions, all armed by the United States, killing one another. We also find that because of America's support of the Sunni warlords in Iraq, which has become the Islamic State of Iraq. That's the name that the Awakening Councils that America provided arms and money, still provides arms and money for the Sunnis so that they can have a militia to counteract the Shiite militias that have been terrorizing them. They operate under the name of the Islamic State of Iraq. That is the group, by the way, that is called the country's Al-Qaeda wing by illiterate reporters, illiterate in the sense that they don't read, they don't bother to learn anything, so they don't understand, that they, according to this article, are invigorated by the Sunni Muslim rebellion next door in Syria. Well, the fact is, they aren't invigorated by it. They're the ones who turned a peaceful protest in Syria into a civil war. The very weapons and the very people that America armed in the Awakening Councils is now the Islamic State of Iraq. They are the principal insurgents. They are the reason that Syria turned into a civil war as opposed to a peaceful political standoff. The Awakening Councils, this Islamic State in Iraq, said in a release, "What has reached you on Tuesday is just the first drop of rain." Boy, isn't that poetic. Suicide bombings that murdered 60 people, mutilated 10 times that number. It's just the first drop of rain, a first phase. And by, here it says, God's will, as you and I know, Allah is not God. There was no reason to capitalize the G here, and This individual did not say Illah, which would be the Arabic word for God. They said Allah. For by Allah's will, after this, we will have our revenge. Sunni Islamists see Iraq's Shiite-led government as oppressors of the country's Sunni minority and target Shiites to try to provoke a sectarian confrontation, like the slaughter that killed thousands in 2006 and 2007. That's the reference that I shared with you, that every journalist makes. And yet there isn't a journalist that's able to make the comparison between the Sunni and Shia terrorist attacks on one another prior to our invasion of Iraq 10 years ago. They can't make that comparison. They can't go back to 2003, but they can go back to 2006 and 2007. The idea is that the worst behavior is worse than the best behavior today. While violence is below, this is, of course, what they always say. The level of the Shiite and Sunni bloodshed that killed tens of thousands a few years ago. Suicide bombers have struck nearly two times a week since January, a rate Iraq has seen now for several years. It's astounding that the people who are supposed to be educated, who have squandered their education, are no longer able to think. They're no longer able to review evidence in context, no longer able to deduce a reasonable conclusion from the facts. Is it any wonder that in a country like Cyprus, the European Union can propose a deal that confiscates people's savings and no one cares? To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Deanna. You can join us in this discussion. Our toll-free number is 877-376-45. Rather than turning to the race of stories that I have on the new Pope and his involvement with a murderous regime in Argentina, a story that I hope we will turn to tomorrow, I'd like to stay on the story of Cyprus since we've broached it, because this just came in. It's from Reuters. Cyprus pleaded for a new loan from Russia today to avert a financial meltdown after the island's parliament rejected the terms of a bailout from the EU, raising the risk of default and a bank crash. Now, mind you, if you confiscate 10% of the savings of bank depositors, you are assured of a bank crash. And what the EU was really offering Cyprus was they were going to confiscate $6 billion worth of deposits in Cypriot banks and provide, after doing so, loans of $10 billion, charging Cyprus interest on $10 billion worth of loans after stealing $6 billion worth of its depositors' money. Some deal, huh? Well, the Cypriot legislature obviously said, no, I mean, that's worse than doing business with the devil. Russia's finance minister said that Nicosia, who is the finance minister, had sought $5 million additional as a loan from Russia on top of a five-year extension and lower interest on an existing $2.5 billion loan. Cyprus is seeking Moscow's help after its parliament voted down the Eurozone's plan for the 10 billion euro bailout. Now, in this particular case, parliament, those individuals would have had their savings confiscated. Now, they did, to make it sound like they're looking out for the little guy and doing their job, they did discuss sparing savings accounts of 30,000 euros and less. Cyprus, Cypriots, as I should say, balked at the European demands for a levy on bank deposits that would have raised 6 billion euros, an unprecedented measure that opponents said would have violated the principle behind an EU-wide guarantee on deposits up to 100,000 euros. Yeah, it's like the FDIC insurance, but in reverse. Rather than protecting accounts, no, we're going to confiscate your savings. Moscow has its own interest in ensuring the survival of banks in Cyprus, because it is a haven for billions of euros by Russian oligarchs. You see, when Russia was transitioned from communist to fascist, the Russian mafia took control of the country. And the Russian mafia created an oligarchy that is fabulously wealthy. And those individuals know that they can't be trusted. Yeah, they're part of the Russian mafia. And they know that those who are allowing them to confiscate this kind of money from the prior state assets can't be trusted. So they don't typically invest their money. They don't park their money, their ill-gotten gain, in Russian banks, because they know, heck, the politicians like Putin can't be trusted. He can wake up one day and say, I don't like you. I want your money, though. I like your money. I'm going to take it and put you in jail. And so they spend most of their time outside of Russia, flying around on their megajets, while they invest their money, park their money outside of Russia. Cyprus, a small little island in the middle of the Mediterranean, turned out to be one of their favorite places. The majority of that $6 billion would have come from the $60 billion that is invested there by Russian oligarchs. So Moscow does have a vested interest in stepping in here. It's interesting that that's where they went. Now, the European Central Bank's chief negotiator on Cyprus, Jorg Amundsen, said that the European Central Bank would pull the plug on the Cypriot banks unless the country took the bailout quickly. Now, does that sound like you've got two devils here? You've got two gangs, two mobs, two mafias. Both of them are offering you a deal that is sure to enslave you, that is sure to rob any freedom from your children. You got your choice of dealing with the demon or the devil. What a wonderful position to be in. This is the exact position that the United States will be in shortly. It is the position that almost every country in Europe will be in shortly. Cyprus is just the trial balloon.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my